Welcome back for another helping of Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, bringing you the best TV shows and movies weekly in an easily digestible podcast packed with laughs by me, Ross Bolin, and my dear friend, Mr. Barrett Dudley. Barrett, how are you?
Oh, what's going on, Ross? I'm doing all right. I'm happy to be back in the studio. It's been a few weeks since we've been together, sitting here, both in studio.
True.
And
you were teening.
Having a chat with one another. Yes, I was teening last week.
Uh-huh.
It all worked out. I tested negative twice and I've had no symptoms, and
you went and got a second one?
Well, so here's what happened. I mean, COVID's relative to everything these days, so I'll just quickly tell my story. There's this one company called Curative.
Okay.
If you ever need a test and you're like, oh, I don't know if my insurance takes it, or you don't have insurance or anything, like,
right.
Curative, 100% free testing if they have it in your area.
Got it.
It's also a self-administered swab in the mouth.
Okay.
So nobody jams anything up anywhere close to your brain. It's very easy. All you have to do is not drink or eat or smoke anything 20 minutes prior to your test.
Right.
You get online, you schedule it, boom. If you have insurance, you put your card in. If you don't, you just, that's no, nothing. The government's paying for it.
That government money.
It's also a PCR test, which is the most accurate. Anyway, you do this, and now it can take anywhere from 24 to 72 hours to get your results back.
Okay.
I had one of those scheduled for Saturday. I was worried. I had heard some people saying that it was taking like that full 3 or 4 days to get their results back.
Right.
And so I also went ahead and found a place to do a rapid test just so I could know on Saturday.
Right.
And so I got the rapid test. It was negative. Then the PCR test from Curative came back. Like early yesterday morning, and was also negative, and so
double safe.
So double safe. I'm in the clear.
The one I got was before Christmas, and mm-hmm. it was also self-administered, but it was you spit in the tube.
Oh, right. That's like the one that I think the sports leagues are doing.
Yeah, it was not cheap. I don't even think I asked about insurance. I was just in such a fucking rush to try to get it done, and then it came back negative, and I was just like, I don't even know if I trust this fucking thing. Like. Where did this tube of my spit go?
Yeah. And those are apparently like, they work well for like politicians and athletes because they're getting tested every day.
Right.
And so you're going to, like, eventually it's going to hit if you are positive because
sure.
you're doing it every single day.
Sure.
But for like that one strike off, like, you know.
It didn't feel that reassuring, honestly. I was just like, cool, that was expensive.
I spit in a tube. And you tell me if I have COVID. Yeah.
Like, somehow that doesn't add up. It's like one guy at the lab just being in a bad mood or having a bad day and just being like, oh, fuck this one guy. Oh, negative. And moving on. You know what I mean? It's just like, I don't know. I didn't feel very reassured by the whole situation. But glad to have you back. Happy to be in the studio.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. We endured a snow day, and you were wearing today what is like a Christmassy basketball sweat.
Yeah, it is. It is.
This man is about to do a finger roll in the snow.
This is it's not MJ. It's
okay.
Player 99. It's MJ.
Right.
If you're our age, then you will recall the early days of basketball video games.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan was not in them.
That's true.
They did not license his brand, his image, his name at all to any of them. That's why he's not on.
Pain in the ass.
That's why he's not on NBA Jam or any of the mid to late '90s like NBA Lives.
Yeah, you'd play like Pippen and Rodman.
And so some of those started putting him in there as Player 99.
Okay.
And so that's
is that literally what they titled the sweater?
Yeah, it's the Player 99
that's
sweater.
That's a great.
So, but yeah, it was a snow day. You know, the last like few days have been genuinely cold here in Austin, Texas.
Yes.
Like real winter. Like you go outside to take the trash out and you're like, God damn, it's cold.
Yeah, which is not something we're used to. Everybody in the North is always like, y'all are a bunch of babies. I had a Canadian listener hit me up yesterday and be like, shut up, dude. It's 33. That's every day for me. And I was just like, I know, but this isn't my life. I don't know how to live like this, you know?
So I had to get a wear in on this on this sweater.
It's a beautiful sweater, and you can see it if you're watching on youtube.com/BolinMedia. How about that plug? This episode of OCC is also brought to you by Echelon. When it comes to getting or staying in shape, nothing feels as good as that feeling of accomplishment, of hitting your fitness goals, feeling great about yourself, and Echelon can get you there. They offer the next generation of connected fitness bikes, fitness mirrors, rowing machines, and their all-new Stride Smart treadmill. No matter what your favorite fitness activity, Echelon gives you a fun and challenging workout from the comfort of your home. They're incredible. I bought my mom one of these bikes. She's been using it all the time. She loves it. She sends me pictures of it constantly. I'm not sure why. Like, I think it's going to look differently when when she sends me a new picture, but it is awesome. Their world-class instructors will motivate you with thousands of daily live and on-demand studio-level classes always available when you need them, and unlike their competitors, Echelon is actually affordable for everyone. And one membership lets up to 5 family members all work out at the same time. Again, everything they make is awesome. They've got rowers. They've got the Stride Smart treadmill. They've got the fitness mirrors, the fitness bikes. You just go to echelonfit.com/dragon. That's echelonfit.com/dragon to try any Echelon fitness equipment at home for 30 days right now. Again, you can try any Echelon fitness equipment at home for 30 days when you go to echelonfit.com/dragon. echelonfit.com/dragon. And now it's time.
Dragon.
For what will basically make up our entire show today, everyone's favorite segment, Tidbits and Such with Barry.
Yeah.
Bunch of random stuff you wanted to talk about today, dude.
Boy, it sure
is. I like the list.
Sure is. Let me just start by asking you, what's your media diet been like this week? What have you been watching before we jump into a few of the things that I have on my list here?
Continuing to work my way through What We Do in the Shadows Season 1.
Okay.
Continues to be phenomenal. I am watching the build toward what you called... I can't remember your exact wording, but you were like, I think we may be looking at like a top tier.
Oh yeah, like a Pantheon show
comedy here.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And I am agreeing with that sentiment thus far. Every episode has left me like near tears, laughing, cackling in my room alone or with my girlfriend or whatever. Like the show is just, it's really, really fun, dude. And it's rare for me to find a comedy that draws me in as much as this one has. Like, don't get me wrong, Schitt's Creek, great show, lots of fun. But was it blowing me away with like witty, funny new concepts and ridiculous shit every week? No, not really. It was more
funny.
Of a genuine, wholesome, like
yep.
real life comedy, right?
Yes.
This is so absurd and just ridiculous week in and week out. And obviously the main characters all being vampires with the exception of Guillermo, what are they called?
The Familiar.
Familiar, who's yeah, just getting shit on every week right now. As far as I've been watching, it's awesome, dude. It's I'm so glad I finally got into this one. I can't believe it took me as long as it did, considering I watched the damn movie.
And I know that people were recommending that show to us, but now that we've even posted about it a little bit and we're talking about it, I feel like even more people are like coming out of the woodwork. Like I noticed our friend Kayla like commented on the post and was like, "This is the best comedy out." So I do. While I'm glad that we're basically going to be all caught up and on top of it for season 3, and I don't feel like we're super late because season 1 only came out 2019.
Right.
I am glad that we're here now because this is definitely a show that obviously is like right up both of our alleys. You know, the comparison to Schitt's Creek, like about how those are two different shows is a good one. And I've already mentioned that, like, I struggle to compare this show to other things.
Mm-hmm.
And in saying that, it's got a lot from a bunch of shows that I like, but specifically the characters. There's something Arrested Development about this show.
Yes.
And I think it's that the characters are each so like zany in their own right.
They
each have these like quirks that are hilarious and make...
But pretty extreme in this case.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then you've got Guillermo, the familiar, who is the human dealing with it all.
And the fucking just, energy yeah. vampire
so,
kills me.
I'm very happy to have this show in our lives right now.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you've continued to watch there.
Yeah, I'll be caught up soon. Look, any shame I would normally feel for being what I would consider late to the party in this case is completely removed by 2020. That was totally unfair circumstances that put us in a weird position, all of us, in terms of finding out about the best new shows and stuff. And look, we got through the year with a lot of great shit, but the fact that I wasn't on this one, I could have used this last year is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This would have been nice, and I didn't get in early enough. I wish I'd gotten in earlier. I'm happy to be here now. Thank you to everybody who's recommended it. And if you're not on board with What We Do in the Shadows, what is it, FX on Hulu or is it just Hulu? It's on Hulu.
It is FX. I believe that this show was originally an FX show.
Okay.
And there is some confusion there for me, whether like...
And everyone.
Because all FX shows now make their way to Hulu, I'm not totally sure what the difference is. And even a show like Dave, which was FX on Hulu, only was releasing week by week. So they're even doing, was that on FX? And I don't know.
Like, are they showing it on FX as well with commercials or?
Yes, they are doing that. Okay. They are doing that. I guess that's a good point. I guess if you're paying for the Hulu service, then you're getting them commercial free. But
it's further distribution. It's kind of like the way HBO Max has signed all these random networks like TMC and shit.
Right.
I guess they probably own some of those. But regardless, Hulu continues to impress with their selection of stuff.
Hulu, because it's. Because Disney bought Fox, and Fox was a big investor in Hulu, as was ABC and Disney, they pretty much own now FX. Disney basically owns FX.
Got it.
Is the headline here. And so they're just using the FX people and studios
to bolster
and execs
their Hulu offering.
To like, hey, you go make a ton of shit. You're going to make so much shit that it won't all be able to just go on FX. So now there's FX on Hulu, but all of it is housed on Hulu regardless. Anyway, I've probably confused all of our listeners by now, but
no,
okay,
that was actually helpful for me to understand why so much shit ends up on Hulu. But all in all, it's because they want Hulu as a platform to be obviously more attractive, and the more good stuff they can get on there, the better. So they found this relationship with FX to be a huge winner thus far, as we've mentioned multiple of our favorite shows recently have come through this relationship. So huge for them.
Yeah. So you'll recall about a year ago, right about this time, we were jumping into HBO's The Outsider.
Oh, that was... Wow. God, that feels like it was a decade ago.
Yeah, I want to say that that show premiered on January 13th, 2020. Boy, it really does feel... That was pre-pandy. So,
yeah.
Simpler times.
I'm putting myself back where I was at that point. And man, life was really fucked up. But I had no idea how much weirder it would
really
get.
I really cannot wait for the year where I don't look back at the previous year and say, simpler times.
Well, that's certainly not happening. I'm not looking back at 2020 and saying that. Well, I guess I am for January. I am still.
Yeah, right.
So we're going to need to get as much distance between us and 2020 as quickly as possible.
So I'm not sure if it is finally the kind of like break in shooting schedules finally catching up. But as far, like, and as far as I can tell, there's not really any show outside of maybe Bridgerton on Netflix that people are really grasping onto early here, January 2021. There's not like a there was some chatter on Discord about like a maybe an anime show that's pretty popular. It's AOT or something like that, maybe.
I've heard.
Does that sound right?
Dude, I've heard. Spirited Away is an anime one that keeps getting brought up to me that's on HBO. There's a whole. HBO Max has a whole subsection. It's one of those other brands like Turner Classic Movies that I was mentioning. I can't recall the name of which brand it is, but they pump out a ton of anime stuff that my co-host on the Ross Boland podcast, Chris, because he's a Gen Z dude, has been working his way through. That's like more up their alley. We don't. Like my age group, man, we. Or I don't know if it was just a geographical thing. Like we did not get the anime bug the way these kids.
So you and I were in a very weird zone because we also missed by like 1 or maybe 2 years is Pokemon.
Yep.
We were right ahead of the Pokemon craze. So like kids that are, you know, you and I are, I turned 34 a couple months ago. You turned 34 pretty soon. Kids that are like 33, 32, 31, almost like universally had experience with Pokemon.
Right. And that really into that.
Which is like opened the door for anime and manga and that type of stuff. So
it was this thing we didn't really understand.
It missed us. And because of that, there's like a barrier to entry for me, you know, like, and a lot of these, a lot of this younger generation, and I'm sure probably a lot of the, our listeners that were recommending AOT, which I'm trying to figure out what that was standing for, but people are just calling it AOT, and I can't find where they actually said where our Discord members actually said the actual
Attack
name.
Attack on Titan.
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, it's like they all watched the Avatar: Last Firebender, the infamous show, which was a combination of M. Night Shyamalan and James Cameron's titular properties. Obviously that's a joke, chill out.
I got you
but yeah, so it's like a lot of those people have experience with that show, which is by all accounts supposed to be brilliant and great. Anyway, pretty tough to get me into an anime show. I won't lie to you.
I started watching Avatar: The Last Airbender, and it is tight. I get it. But again, it was like that. If I had watched it as a kid, or like even a 17, 18, 19 year old, 20 year old, whatever, somewhere in there, man, that probably would have sucked me in. But I'm just like a little outside the age range for that show now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really difficult for me. I always have people throwing anime shows at me that they think they recommend would be a good entryway.
Mm-hmm.
And Spirited Away is one of them. And again, HBO Max has, like, I'm looking at the Spirited Away section on here, and it's like, if you like this, you'd like, and there's like 30 other options for anime on HBO Max now that all come out of this one studio that I am totally failing to remember what the hell it is called at the moment.
Well, while you look that up and clarify for us,
see,
I'll begin the segue here, because there is a show releasing this Friday that I do believe many people, including our listeners, will be tuning in for.
Ghibli. Thank you, Barry.
Okay.
The Ghibli Library, G-H-I-B-L-I.
Oh, yes, yes.
Continue, sir.
Yeah. Okay. And it is, I want to say that I'm correct here, it's the first big Disney Plus Marvel TV series, and it's WandaVision.
WandaVision.
And I'm pretty stoked, because another thing that is usually tough for me to get into is the superhero stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And while I'm not super interested in something like Falcon and Winter Soldier coming to Disney Plus later this year, I'm very, very interested in WandaVision. This is the one that piqued my interest the most. It's the one that I absolutely will start watching immediately this weekend. And early reactions are good. I have a Rotten Tomatoes editorial pulled up here that that states it's both a superhero story and a loving homage to the American sitcom. Ooh. That it's a quirky winner. I really like Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen. They've been good in the films, with the limited kind of ensemble roles that they have.
Sure.
The trailers for the show look really, really interesting and kind of weird. And
so, what is it that's got you, like, more so than you would be with other superhero stuff, interested in this one? Just that quirky nature of it.
So. You take the concept for, like, Falcon and Winter Soldier, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it feels very much a continuation of Avengers.
Sure.
These two guys who are, like, you know, big bad superheroes, they're jacked and have wings and hammers and swords and weapons and shit.
Flying around and shit.
Are going to be, like, you know, doing superhero stuff, right?
Beat bad guys.
Yeah. And so while I certainly expect that this TV show will have some of that, Scarlet Witch and Vision are pretty unique in, like, their various powers, especially Vision.
Are the two superheroes it's going to focus on?
Correct. And on top of that, it genuinely looks like they tried to do something interesting with this television show. I'm sure you've seen the trailers where Scarlet Witch and who is Wanda,
mm-hmm.
And Vision are, like, stuck in, like, a 1950s black and white type look,
yeah.
Type set.
Yeah.
And so I don't know exactly what they're going to do here, but
is hitting.
Yeah, I'm in to watch this one.
So for those of you who
just
don't
because
know...
it doesn't look like I expect the superhero stuff on Disney Plus to look, and therefore I am far more intrigued.
I'm going to read the Wanda Maximoff and the Vision little synopsis for those two characters on Wikipedia, just because for those who are unfamiliar like me, it might be helpful. So for Wanda, an Avenger who can harness magic, engage in telepathy and telekinesis, and alter reality. It's a hell of a lot of powers. Seems nice. And for Vision, an android and former Avenger created using the artificial intelligences Jarvis and Ultron, as well as the Mind Stone. So that clarifies for everybody.
Yeah. Here, let me just read you some early reviews. Weird, fun, and simply amazing.
Pretty much what I want.
Here's another one. It's a blast to watch. It is so committed to the sitcom structure of storytelling that it feels like a bold risk, but it pays off and builds a mystery. It's great. Weird, loaded with sitcom tropes, and what I wasn't expecting, kind of scary. I'm dying for more. Somebody else says, also, and I cannot stress this enough, hooray for half-hour episodes. Storytelling confident enough to be concise is one of my favorite things.
Did you write this one?
Yes, that is a no. Somebody from Alex BSE or BC. I don't know how to say that last name.
Very take though.
From USA Today. And yeah, so it's just all hitting for me, and it feels like maybe the first, I hate to use this word because this barely exists anymore, but like semi-consensus show that I know a lot of people will be interested in and starting to watch.
Right on. WandaVision starting this Friday. Barrett's in. I'm in too.
Let's see.
WandaVision.
Okay, moving on here. What else do I have on my list?
Okay. WonkaVision?
Let's talk about something that I started watching. Like I said, there's this gap. Currently, I'm watching What We Do in the Shadows. I am making my way through The Crown. I'm towards the end of season one.
Okay.
Not a whole lot to say there. If you like historical dramas...
Crown's a great show.
It's good. It's fun. But I not really much to comment further.
Cool.
Great scenery.
It's always how I felt about The Crown. It's a really fun,
set pieces, great acting, and...
visually stimulating watch. It's relaxing for the most part. It's a very cool look at history.
But so last week I told you that I had watched the HBO Max docuseries, Heaven's Gate, The Cult of Cults.
Yes.
Yeah. And they reference in that documentary the happenings at Waco.
Ah, yes, Waco.
Yeah.
Waco, Texas.
With the Branch Davidians and David Koresh and the siege that ensued, basically. Yeah. And so Laura and I were both like, oh, you know what? We should probably go back and watch that Waco.
So y'all hadn't seen Waco?
No.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
Yes. I watched it when it was on.
Okay.
And was like one of the people that was all enthralled by this show.
Yeah, and it's only six episodes.
Yeah, it's quick.
So we watched episode one, and a couple comments just broadly.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad that Taylor Kitsch got something to bite off like this.
Yeah, dude.
Because he's not a bad actor.
No.
He's pretty good.
No.
And he really seems to inhabit the David Koresh character in episode one.
This is the best thing I've seen him do.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Acting wise.
So I'm happy to see him put in work like that. I thought episode one started really well. By the end of the hour, I had a little bit of like, I can kind of see how this show was on Paramount and not HBO. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, but yes, but almost intentionally, it takes like a very... like not to be taken too seriously angle almost. It's like, we want to show this and represent what happened, but also not try to be too, it's like, let me put it this way. It ain't Chernobyl.
Right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like it's level of like, just like of everything from the writing and the direction, I would say.
It's like, it doesn't feel like you're actually watching it unfold. It feels like you're watching like a reenactment almost.
Yes, yes.
But it's still really enjoyable. And honestly, for you and I, because obviously growing up in Texas, we were very aware of this when it happened. Just, we were very young.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my parents telling me about David Koresh and the situation in Waco, and I didn't really grasp it. And then learning more when I became an adult, and obviously cults becoming something that I'm extremely fascinated by now as an adult. And then when the show came out, I watched it and then read even more about it. And it's just an insane story about a cult gone horribly wrong. And really, in this case, the government's less than perfect, I would say, response to that cult and the tragedy that ensues. The acting is really fun, and I think that's one of the reasons you wanted to bring it up, because there's like all these random characters and shit, right?
Yeah, and so on top of my comments about the show in general, and again, sorry for just like bringing up all this old ass shit that people were watching 2 years ago.
This is my jam, dude. This is my jam right here.
But so this show stars Michael Shannon and Shea Whigham, who I don't know what's going on there, whether they have the same agent or if they're like best friends. And if like one of them goes into an interview to an audition, and at the very end, he's like, I know you're going to want to book me for this part because I'm a great actor, but I'm only signing if Michael is also on board, or Michael's like, I'm only signing if Shay is also on board. And I pulled up, I'm not exactly sure like how to figure out how to get a list of everything that they've been in together. But I have an interview here with Shea Whigham where he says, it's with Collider. Collider
I'm
asks,
looking at this exact interview.
You've worked with Michael Shannon a few times now. Have any of the times that you guys worked together on projects been intentionally sought out by the two of you together, or has it just been a happy coincidence? And Shea said, no, I don't think it's a coincidence. Seven times.
Seven?
Once or twice, maybe. We come together, it seems like, every couple of years. With this one, we wanted to find something to do together. He's one of my closest friends, and he's an incredibly generous actor.
Awesome.
We found this through the producers, Laura Smith and Kristen Mann, who came to us, and we both jumped at the chance, especially in New Orleans as well. I believe he's talking about the movie The Quarry.
Right, here. Yes, yes.
But yeah, so I guess they just... I don't know. I don't know if there's anything like these two, especially, where where they both like working together and their close friends and producers and directors all know, like, these guys have great chemistry.
Yes.
And basically, like, if you get one of them, it's probably...
You can get the other.
Yeah, it's probably in every discussion. Like, oh, well, we got Michael. Do we have a role
for
Shay?
Do we want to get Shay?
Do we want to get Shay?
Because we can, and he's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And why wouldn't you?
It's really...
That is fascinating, dude, especially because, like you said, it's like... Well, and as he put it in that quote, that they're very good friends. I mean, I feel like you would... once you've got that thing and you can see that you worked together well on stage and you're homies, it's like, let's try to book as many things together as we can.
Why not? Why not?
Especially HBO homies who get the opportunity.
This one also throws in Paul Sparks, who the original...
To be clear, Waco not on HBO.
Where I feel like my original experience with Shay and Michael together was in Boardwalk Empire.
Right.
And Paul Sparks is also in Waco, and he was also in Boardwalk Empire. And I feel like that's a show. I feel like there's a lot of pairings that have come out from that where actors continue to work together. But maybe it's just Shay and Michael that I'm...
Oh, man, Paul Sparks, the House of Cards guy that banged everyone in the first family.
Is that right? Is he the one that was...
He was a journalist that was writing the book about him, and it was... Yeah, man.
So, yeah, Paul Sparks, he's Mickey in Boardwalk Empire.
Also in The Night Of.
And... Just to talk about Paul Sparks, very, very lucky that he's a good actor, because it would be easy to... When I see him, it takes me a minute. I have to hear him talk a little bit and get into the new character. Otherwise, I just see him and I'm thinking of Boardwalk Empire. Like, okay, hey, what do you see, huh, guy?
Yeah, he's the most over-the-top 1920s gangster joke in Boardwalk.
Which clearly, like, there had to have been people that looked and sounded in... talked like that, otherwise they wouldn't have. That was a very, very prestigious drama with amazing characters, and, like, you know, they wouldn't have just thrown a guy in
some,
like,
of those...
Hey, you have to be the over the top, like, you know, caricature of a 1920s gangster.
Look here, copper, listen here, see? yeah. But for some reason, that trope of, like, that gangster, we're all familiar with. I feel like everybody in Dick Tracy was that guy or something.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, but for some reason, that just was, like, totally cool with me. I was like, I'm glad they got one of those guys, because that's what I think of when I think of these gangsters.
So, yeah, I don't know if Waco had, like, the same casting director as Boardwalk, or it's just interesting when these little... Especially in dramas, right? Because we're used to it with comedies. Like, there's, like, the frat pack and the Apatowians and, like, all these kind of groups that are, like, you know, they're troops of a sort. They're like, we work together,
comedians
we write
roll
together,
like that
we,
too,
we do all these comedies together. It works.
Very insecure people. They need to roll in packs.
But less frequently do you see that type of thing happening and playing out in dramas. I feel like
me too. I'm joking. Oh, by the way, your boy Paul Sparks played Billy Graham in The Crown. Reverend Billy Graham.
I have not gotten there.
Oh, well, enjoy.
Yeah. Do you recall? You remember
I do.
Seeing him?
Meets Queen Elizabeth.
Well, how about that?
I want to say the implication was that she was quite taken with him, but I can't remember. Perhaps I'm wrong, perhaps I'm right. I guess you'll all have to watch and see. Ha ha. But anyway, looking forward to WandaVision and then hearing from anybody else who watches Waco.
No, I'm just mostly commenting on Michael Shannon and Shay Whigham pairing, really.
Huzzah.
Yeah, but I will
those dudes are fucking phenomenal.
I will continue to watch the show, and should I have any further thoughts about it, I'll be sure to report on them here. Okay,
when you finish it, for sure tell us what you thought about Waco, because I'm interested.
Do you want... Okay, I've got two more things here. Do you want new news, or do you want old news?
Give me more old news, and let's close with new news. Yeah, more old news. Let's live in this nice time capsule.
Okay, so you know that I've begun this new habit of utilizing the YouTube TV to just, like, put on random movies that are on TNT or AMC or IFC or
I used to do this all the time.
BBC,
not with YouTube,
or
but...
any of them.
Yeah,
sci-fi, whatever, any and all above. BBC, BBC One,
BBC Two. Yeah, thank you. I still watch the BBC a lot.
So this past Saturday, scrolling through, waiting for the football games to start, and I land on Starship Troopers, 1997's Starship Troopers.
Oh, wow. This is before some of you,
now,
I'm sure.
Ross, this movie has a very... This movie, we were 11, 12 years old. It is etched and seared into my adolescent formative brain.
Yeah.
As it stands out.
Dude, all y'all in our friend group that went to that middle school together have this movie like as one of your like kind of pantheon action movies from childhood.
And it's and first and foremost, it is because this is the very first movie that I ever remember being dropped off at a movie theater at and sneaking in to go see this movie instead.
Instead of the one you were supposed to see.
Instead of the one we were supposed to see.
Got you. Huge moment in a young man or woman's life.
Yes. And this one was especially like perfect for that because it had all sorts of stuff that 12-year-old boys are very, very infatuated and fascinated and just mind blown by.
Just aliens exploding.
Namely, just exploding bug guts everywhere.
Everywhere, dude.
And then also the boobies of Dizzy and Carmen, played by Denise Richards.
Yeah, when you Google Starship Troopers, it immediately tries to get you to go to like Dizzy's boobs as the next as the next thing down.
I'm actually not sure if we saw Denise Richards' boobs in this one, but we definitely saw Dina Myers as Dizzy's. And there's like a co-ed shower scene, and like this movie just has everything for a 12-year-old boy to just be like I just said, just
co-ed
like,
shower scene,
mind blown by.
They make sex in the shower.
And no. There's it's not. They don't.
Oh,
they're just. It's all. It's a military shower, and it's co-ed.
Oh, okay.
Everybody's getting, you know, in the they're the mobile infantry. They're just all it's co-ed showers, baby.
Yeah, shower up, get clean in there.
It's a new world.
Understood.
Okay, this movie poorly rated when it came out. Got panned.
Yeah,
it's not supposed to be a good movie. It's interesting though because it's one of these ones. One, it's kind of a cult classic at this point.
Oh, I think very much so, yeah.
Two, it's widely regarded now for its, like, political commentary and satire.
No shit.
And you watch this movie, and there is so much stuff going on about, like, the overreach of the government and imperialist nations and, like, colonization of, of you know, of, like, savage places, essentially.
Right, 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 right.
And just, like, it basically is saying a lot of the same stuff that Avatar is saying.
I was about to say, this sounds like Avatar.
In a much more subtle and possibly better way. I mean, Avatar's pretty on the damn nose.
It's so on the nose.
You know,
they
what I
literally
mean?
Named the thing Unobtainium.
Unobtainium. Yeah.
Come on. What the hell is that?
So it's pretty intriguing to watch it from that aspect. And then there's just a whole lot else at play. But what I wanted to focus in on here is Casper Van Dien. He's our lead. He plays Johnny Rico.
Johnny Rico.
And you watch this guy, and my goodness, is he good looking in 1997?
Huzzah.
Just the most chiseled jaw and beautiful face.
He looks like every character in Street Fighter.
Yes, yes. And he might have played one of the ones in Street Fighter. I'm not sure.
Every character in Street Fighter, just the main white American soldier guy.
Was this guy, oh damn, now I have to look this up. Was this guy Guile? He might have been.
He might have been Guile. I'll look it up.
Okay, so yeah, and he didn't end up having a very successful career. I mean, he's a working actor, still is. But this did not launch him into any type of, you know, major A-list Hollywood icon stature.
Right.
And, you know, he basically the next thing that he got was Tarzan in the Lost City. He was cast as Tarzan. And I think that movie was a huge flop. And I think that was basically it for him.
Sad.
We're watching this movie. We're kind of talking like about other actors of his ilk. And we're kind of thinking like he may have just basically been up for all the same roles as the following.
He was Johnny Cage, Barrett.
Johnny Cage.
In Mortal Kombat.
Is he?
Legacy, the TV series. Never mind. Oh, he's done a ton of voice acting shit,
yeah,
too.
He has
I
done
didn't
a ton
realize
of voice
that.
Acting.
Okay, he was doing... hold on. There was one that I just saw that I passed that I was like, oh, what the hell? Oh, he was in Call of Duty Black Ops 4. He was one of the voices. That's
okay.
How low things got after he started in Starship Troopers.
I mean, voice work pays, baby.
True.
So was he basically just in that right in that same vein as Paul Walker and Ryan Phillippe and Hayden Christensen, and he just kept getting beat out for like roles by those guys?
But
basically?
I'd say even basically like the gap was already filled. Like there were people in those types of roles, and he wasn't quite good enough
and
to overpower them.
So just I don't know, just one that got away, that Casper Van Dien.
I gotta say, one of the funniest IMDb pages in terms of the names of the projects he worked on that I've ever scrolled through, like, period.
No, he is like if you're like a fan of bad horror movies or just kind of B movie schlock,
yeah,
that's the work that this dude got.
God damn, this guy goes in two episodes of Saved by the Bell, uncredited, in 1991.
He was also in, looks like an episode of Silk Stockings.
Also Beverly Hills 90210.
Are you familiar with Silk Stockings, Ross?
I'm not.
Okay. Yeah, pretty sure it's a softcore porno from like Showtime or HBO.
Gonna look that one up as soon as we leave here today, Barrett.
I could be wrong, though. I feel like that's what it is, though.
You mentioned earlier, well, first of all, are you done with your Starship Troopers commentary?
Yeah, pretty much.
I need to watch this one again. It's been decades.
It's pretty fun. Definitely, don't watch it on TV. Go watch it with no commercials. There's a great Neil Patrick Harris cameo. There's just a lot of insanity. There's a lot of really, like, this movie is pretty over the top, but I think it was actually pretty self-aware of all that.
Right.
And it kind of like missed people in 1997. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, this is a bad
action movie.
With bad scenes and bad acting. And I think it was like floating above that. It was like, yeah, we know. That's the point. Like, this is a throwback to 1970s and 1980s. Like the book that it's based on was I think from the 1950s.
It's
that type of like science fiction, like more like what's the one that Tom Cruise redid? War of the Worlds.
It's
that type of thing.
That kind of vibe. Okay.
Yeah. So, not the vibe of the movie, but that type of kind of old school sci-fi horror. Type
right.
Thing.
Right. Right. I understand what you're
all
saying.
About, like aliens and bugs and worlds colliding.
Yeah,
and
the
boring.
Aspects of the movie are a little bit more like that one. Yeah.
So just kind of an all-timer and. Just, you know, that Casper Van Dien, man, he didn't quite make it out of there into the career that he maybe should have had, or maybe should have. Maybe
respect he's... Casper Van Dien. I had something, what you mentioned earlier, though, that people are kind of the beginning of the year. There's this weird gap, right? There's not any one show that everybody's all aware of right now in particular. We don't have a Queen's Gambit situation going here at the beginning of the year.
Right.
And I think that's usually the result of these networks and the studios being aware of the fact that people need to get their footing at the front of a new year, right? So I think it's kind of this gap period where things are a little bit slower. And I wanted to bring up something that it's sort of in our vein that happened this past weekend that I think is important enough to discuss. Because as a result of there not being so much TV, I've been watching, you know, the NFL playoffs, a little more sports, some NBA.
Yes.
Letting myself indulge in the misery that is being a Houston sports fan. And for those of you who are aware, Nickelodeon... The channel that you and I grew up watching cartoons like Doug, Rugrats, Rocko's Modern Life, and the like on, hosted an NFL playoff game meant to aim the NFL more at children. And it featured graphics like the slime zone instead of the end zone, where if someone scored a touchdown, these massive cannons shot slime all over the place. Of course, it was CGI. There wasn't real slime. At one point, one of the referees actually accidentally stood right over the slime cannon, and it looked like he was ejaculating green all over the slime zone. It was disturbing and incredible. A few minutes in, I was like, this is the stupidest thing I have ever seen. And within 20 minutes, I was like, I never want to watch sports any other way for the rest of my life. This was made for people who smoke weed and do drugs. It is like the perfect combination of everything I love between sports and cartoons. At one point, the fucking field goal post turned into SpongeBob SquarePants. Like between the post was just a huge SpongeBob and the dude kicked a field goal through SpongeBob's mouth.
This was widely regarded as one of the most brilliant things to happen all weekend. In fact, it may have overshadowed something that I forgot about, was that this insane Tiger Woods documentary started on Sunday night.
Right, which he and his agent have already come out and said, by the way, is like just another effort to smear and profit from the life of Tiger. Like, he did not sign off on this shit.
Okay.
He is completely uninvolved and very, very unhappy.
So not a last dance.
This is not the last dance, basically. They tried to make it look like it was.
Yep.
And then immediately his agent was like, suck all of our dicks. Absolutely not. No. Fuck y'all. We had nothing to do with this. Tiger is pissed. So we'll see. I have not watched any of it yet.
I have not either. I think it's two parts.
People are stoked, though. Obviously, we saw what the last dance was. Everybody was in for that. They tried to kind of get that vibe. They must have had some rights to something that they were able to pull this off or some shit. But Tiger and his agent, apparently not on board for it. But seriously, this Nickelodeon thing was...
I heard nothing but good things.
So entertaining, man. And not just for good reasons, Barrett. Also for bad ones. This was the first time they've done this. And like, I'll give you a weird thing. Every single commentator, including people they would go to on the field, one of them being like a 15-year-old kid that was using words like bet during his commentary... We're all wearing bomber jackets. I don't know if you have any take on that, like as the host of the Club Cool podcast and fashion obviously being something you focus on. Are bomber jackets like the only thing Gen Z kids are wearing right now or something in the winter? Every person, Barrett, like six people in bomber jackets. It was bizarre. I was so confused by the fashion choice. When you watch an NFL game on, you know, one of the regular networks, the guys are in suits, right?
Yes,
but they're all
yes.
in wild, outrageous, different suits. And the women are typically dressed however the climate dictates. But all different. Nobody looks the same. These cats were looking like they were in uniform and bomber jackets. It was so weird. At one point, one of the female hosts, who I believe is like a 14-year-old girl as well, did one of the most spot-on Cardi B impressions I've ever heard, which resulted in somebody in the background of the broadcast going, "What the fuck?" which got picked up on the air and was also hysterical.
That was Cordero Patterson who dropped the F-bomb that made the broadcast.
Oh, yeah, okay. I
just
saw
like a
camera guy.
About that. Yeah,
I thought it was a camera guy who was like, "This is the weirdest thing I've ever had to film." But it was outrageous. At one point, there was a fight on the field, and they had to try to explain like how emotions boil over in the game of football to children.
So, okay, that's my question. I'm hearing about this. I hear how great it is. The slime zone. It's awesome. Somebody scores a touchdown, they get slimed. Yeah. The thing. I love the little graphics. The overlay of SpongeBob as the goalpost is awesome. I won't lie to you though. There's a part I didn't watch any of this. I wasn't even aware when it was happening. I was only aware after the fact.
Yeah.
Sadly. Does any part of you like hear this and you're like, man, is the NFL really something that should be marked? There's something that feels semi like,
oh, the first thing I thought was, why the fuck was this allowed?
Yeah.
We're like, aiming the most violent sport in the world that we've already just gone through this decade long battle to prove that causes most mental health and CTE and all these issues for guys.
Yeah.
And then we're like, but how can we find a way so kids can enjoy it?
And all, I mean, also, like, obviously, like, the NFL has become very political with both the kneeling and the protesting, and then even, like, the masks. And
Drew Brees was actually one of the main guys in that, who was, by the way, starring as the quarterback in the... Wait, no, it was Bears.
Yeah. Bears-Saints.
Oh, yeah. It was Bears-Saints. Mm-hmm. Brees was on the field. Never mind. Oh, you're right, because at one point they said, you know how, Barrett, they'll be like, James Harden and LeBron James, and here are the stats comparing them. They put up, it was literally... fucking Drew Brees and Taysom Hill. And the comparison, Barrett, SpongeBob and Patrick. They did this with every player. Kamara was compared to like a character from Doug.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, it was absolutely outrageous.
But yeah, there's something a little weird about pushing the NFL on children.
Yeah, which, so here's my, like, they should take this shit off of Nickelodeon, but still do it this way and make it only for adults.
I say that, and then I start thinking about it. Like, kids love sports too, man. I mean, this is, if there is one thing that is like family fair, it's teaching your kids how to cheer for the sports teams that you care about.
Sure.
And watching the games together. So, really, it's fine. It is what it is.
We have our kids watch other stuff that we don't then expect them to go out and do.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, this all boils down to just parenting
your personal choice, parenting
children
yeah.
well. And if you think they're ready to partake and watch the NFL, then they probably are.
Yeah, good point.
And it's great. And you don't just because we're all NFL fans doesn't mean we're all playing football. So, you know, there is something. I don't know. I don't think I would have felt the same way if it had been like baseball or basketball.
It was kind
there's
of
there's something
the,
just a little dirty about football, about the NFL.
It was almost like this was more enjoyable because of that contradiction, like
uh-huh.
that it was so outrageous that it was Nickelodeon and the slime and the kids' jokes, and like they'd show like a player score a touchdown and he'd be in the end zone and like hearts started bubbling up from around him, like these animated hearts.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like watching a video game, but it was real, but it was like, as an adult who spends Sunday a little toasty trying to fucking unwind before the week starts, this was couldn't have been better for me, man. I was so stoked on this, and I hope they do it every game. They won't. And I'm quite confused by the marketing of the NFL to children, which I'm sure...
Were they doing stuff like this? Like putting eyeballs and hamburgers on people's heads?
I didn't see that particular
one,
but
that
looks
incredible.
That's
just Photoshop.
That looks incredible. I'm
okay,
not sure.
Is this one of the bomber jacket kids?
Yep. That's... Dude, so they would go to that kid on the field, and he was like... Sup, swag. All right, bet. You see the players on the field, they're a little frustrated with each other right now. But on that note, like, football, you know, people can catch a mood, y'all. And like, and then they were like, all right, back to you in the booth. And it was so, I was just sitting there on my couch like, this is my fucking dream. This is American, like, culture peaking right here. SpongeBob and, like, a dude getting a concussion on the field and having to be taken off by a stretcher while a 14-year-old in a bomber jacket explains, like, why that's part of football.
I think that, I think Club Cool's answer for the bomber jacket. This is, children's fashion doesn't quite follow along the same speed as adult fashion, of course. So, like, the pinnacle of kid fashion right now is still kind of like that almost like cool rock star with a little like hip hop
pop star deal.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that bomber jacket is,
it fits in that.
He probably had on some like real skinny jeans too, I bet.
So it was that kid, but then like the three people in the booth all had like the exact same style, different colors, but bomber jackets. And okay. I was just
probably just a decision by Nickelodeon
to just go with the bomber jacket as their look.
Everybody in bomber jackets.
Yeah, it was
pink,
a little
purple, red, like bright colors.
It's just a little weird. I was like, okay, bomber jackets, crushing it. Nobody could have thrown on a fucking hoodie. What the hell?
Yeah, I hope they do another one because I need to see this live.
Yeah, Barrett, it was really exciting. I won't lie, you missed a piece of history here. Piece of history.
Maybe there'll be some clips on YouTube.
Anything else you wanted to touch on today before we get out of here?
Yes, my final note.
One more bit.
Yes, here's something new for everybody out there since we've spent the rest of this podcast talking about things that are somewhere in between 2 and
17 years old.
24 years old.
Yeah. Well, Nickelodeon was this weekend. We're current. Look at us.
There's a reboot. A new limited series is coming. It's a follow-up. It's a reboot to what I can only imagine is a favorite show for both you and I and most of our listeners. It's Sex and the City.
Yes. And one of my all-time favorite
dramas.
And the
reboot is called And Just Like That, ..
Look, this is funny to me, all right? I don't know if it's funny to everybody, but it's really funny to me, so I have to share it. I know it's not funny to at least one person, but right before I got divorced, dude, every day I got home, the ex was watching one of two things, Sex in the City, or literally the show Divorced. And because of Sex in the City, like, I remember I'd get home and look at Carrie on the screen doing whatever fuckery she was doing, and I was like, I'm getting a divorce. Like, I was like, this is so over, bro. Like, she was so clearly, like, you know what I mean, fantasizing for that life or whatever,
yeah,
and I was like, I'm pretty fucked here, aren't I?
It's
anyway,
not a great
it ended
sign.
Up being the case.
I was
indeed correct. So just a heads up for the dudes out there, or the ladies, if your lady is watching a whole lot of Sex in the City and only Sex in the City and then like mixing in an episode of Divorced, might be time to lawyer up.
Okay, let's spin off from that real quick though, because I immediately know what the male version of that is. If you get home and your husband is like on the couch, like drinking beer and watching Entourage,
you're done.
It's not that's not good.
You're right. If your significant other is watching either Entourage or Sex in the City,
routinely, the pairing is what made it especially. I'm trying to think. It's like I guess. So if your husband is watching Entourage a lot and then like backing that up with I'm sure there's something perfect out there.
Hardcore like DPDA pornography.
Definitely that.
Then the marriage is coming to a close.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
That's neither here nor there. There is a reboot of Sex in the City?
Yeah. So there is a reboot of Sex in the City. This is, I kind of joked to lead this off, but I'm not going to lie to you. I really enjoyed the 6 seasons of HBO's Sex in the City.
No cap. It's a good show. It was a good show.
And just to continue here with personal anecdotes, I feel it's, I don't know the percentage, but watching all of the episodes of Sex in the City is almost like a rite of passage for young women.
Yeah.
And
like you said, it's a lot like the Entourage of, you know, Entourage maybe doesn't play really. I don't know if kids are going back and watching it.
Whether it's like a good example or not, I don't really know. But it is a glamorous lifestyle that a lot of people look at and really
especially
kind of
in America, New York
aspire
City,
to.
Right?
It's New York City. You're single with your friends, right? It Entourage is a great parallel.
Yeah.
It's like a dream life, basically.
Sure.
And so what's really funny is that the first time that I went through all six seasons of this, I was probably like 17 years old.
Right.
And that it's weird to look back on that. I'm thinking about us watching The Sopranos now, tossing in more HBO shows here, about how a rewatch probably would hit so much different now.
Oh, God.
With so much new knowledge and real world adult experience. So anyways, after six seasons, there were two movies. For the last 3 or 4 years now, they have been trying to get a third movie made.
Okay.
And there is a long history, which I spent approximately a half hour this morning researching, trying to figure it all out. But there is a history of beef between Sarah Jessica Parker and Kim Cattrall, who played Samantha.
Right. I saw a headline about this. So was she not going to be included?
So
Samantha?
Kim Cattrall basically killed the third movie. The producers and the writers, they had like apparently what everybody thought was a great script and a great close to the story. Everybody was on board. Kim Cattrall wouldn't do it for one reason or another. There are various rumors. She says that she had closed the chapter in her life. She wasn't going back to the role. It was a personal choice of empowerment, and she was done with it, and she simply said no. There are some other rumors that she basically was like, demanded the studio make some other projects that she has in the works, and then she would do it. And they wouldn't kowtow to that. Who knows what's right? But the beef between her and Sarah Jessica Parker is really strange, and there really does not seem to be a good explanation for it, other than that these two who were arguably, I mean, Sarah Jessica Parker is kind of the clear lead. She's the clear star, the vehicle of the show.
Right.
Hers is the narrating voice.
Yeah.
But Kim Cattrall was arguably kind of like the scene stealer.
Second strongest, if you will, character.
The second strongest character.
Like when she was there and she was in the scene, like she was the star of the show, sort of.
Yeah. And we've also, I mean, the Jason Segel movie, Forgetting Sarah Marshall. It's like the bits, the things that we remember, they typically like revolve around,
I'm Samantha.
Like they're either Carrie or they're Samantha, basically.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it feels just like there was like a rivalry, basically, almost from the get-go. But SJP was the star. She got the executive producer credit first. Then Kim Cattrall negotiated for a higher salary, which kind of rubbed the others the wrong way. And so it's just kind of like one thing after another.
It's contentious in there, man.
Yeah, and it just seems like they just don't get along, and there really isn't much more of an explanation
Which is really not that crazy of a thing if you consider the fact that, like, people start projects with people all the time, and then, you know, if it ends up being one of the biggest, most successful things in the world, and a few years down the line, you're like, I don't even like this motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah.
Fortunately, we didn't have that happen, but Barrett, it happens all the time on TV shows, especially when there's big ensemble casts where a bunch of people become stars, and it gets really complicated on how these, like, four or five people who are the main characters should all be paid when there's, like, a clear-cut star, but then there's, like, all these other stars. It's just, like, Friends had this shit all the time.
Seinfeld had it.
Seinfeld.
They all end up going through this when the show is this successful, and everybody kind of becomes a star in their own right.
Right. In their case, at least they're doing it after the full show ended and they got two movies under their belt.
Yeah.
And now they're still getting to do a reboot.
So anyways, they have, the movie was basically canned. They tried a few different times. Now this has been repackaged and we are getting an HBO limited series follow-up. And Samantha is not included. We don't know what they've done with her, how they've written her out.
I hope they kill her from, like, a horrific STD.
I don't think they'll go that low.
Oh, damn it.
But we are getting a limited series follow-up about these ladies, you know, still pursuing their lives and their dreams and their relationships at an older age. And frankly, I'm in on this. I'm absolutely watching this.
Okay, I'm watching at least episode one because I've got to see what the angle is with, like, 60-year-old women living in New York City. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Like you just said, dude, the whole point of this show was you were selling the dream of living young, rich, and free in the greatest city on earth.
Right.
Surrounded by fashion and celebrities and culture.
Yes.
And now it's like, you're 60 years old.
Yeah. 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 I mean,
I hope some of them are fulfilled.
But we watch stuff like The Undoing. Right. And we and that's sure. And that's great fodder. And while this one won't have like a murder mystery at its
well,
core.
Well, I just mean like, Barrett, to your point, what if it put Entourage back on the air now and they were like, and Vinny Chase is 49.
No, yeah, I'm with you. It's it will be some type of shift.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like,
I know they have an angle or they wouldn't be doing it.
They'll have an angle. And I mean, I'll write the script for Entourage right now. I'll watch some bros getting back together.
Yeah, but if it's like, you know, I'm saying from a realistic standpoint, it's like, okay, Vinny Chase is 49 and now he spends most of his time doing philanthropy and like, you know what I mean? It's like, what the hell is that life is totally different than the up and coming young upstart, like I'm trying to become the biggest star in the world angle, which both of them have.
What you remove from it is that, like, it is the whole thing of
the ambition.
This is what I want.
Yeah.
Look at this. Look how awesome and fun and amazing this all looks.
Yeah, because this is a different angle.
It's a different stage of life, one where things are not as exciting and not as fun, or exciting in different ways.
Which honestly gives the show and the reboot a cool. That is a cool aspect in and of itself that they probably found something meaningful to roll with. So
yeah,
definitely going to give that a chance when it comes out. I'm not going to sit here and promise that that's when I watch all the way through, but I want to see the first episode to see if it goes well.
Yeah,
and put it that way.
Yeah,
and stoked for the millions and millions of SATC fans out there.
There you go.
I don't think anybody calls it that, do they?
They do. They do.
They do.
Okay. They use that acronym to talk about it.
Good. Good. Good.
Yeah.
Huge.
So
LOTR.
AOT.
Still don't know what that is.
OCC.
OCC.
It's not TV. It's OCC.
It is not TV, Baird. It is OCC, and that will do it for today's episode of OCC, produced by Mariah Gossett and Mike Moody Garcia of Permanent Record Studios in Austin, Texas. Huge thanks to our sponsor today, Echelon. Go to echelonfit.com/dragon to try any Echelon fitness equipment at home for 30 days. It's echelonfit.com/dragon. Appreciate y'all. And if you'd also like to further support the show in exchange for riding along through one of the greatest television series of all time with Barrett and I in the form of The Sopranos on Patreon, ad-free every week, episode by episode, you can do that at patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles. There are two tiers to pick from. You can ride through every single episode of HBO's classic crime drama, The Sopranos, with Barrett and I. We are through episode 6. We're doing episode 7 this week of season 1. Plenty of time for you to get caught up quick, fast. It has been a blast so far. Thank you to everybody who's already on Patreon enjoying with us. Support the show. Come through. $5 is the minimum pledge to take on The Sopranos with us, or you can join our $10 tier and get some other perks. We're going to have some stickers being made in the next couple weeks for y'all as well. Looking forward to that and seeing how they turn out. Go to patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles today. Join a tier and watch one of the greatest shows, in my opinion, probably still the greatest show ever made, The Sopranos, with us, episode by episode. Season 1, episode 1's pod is free now, Barrett, for everyone to get in there and access.
If a little slap
go,
and pickle.
If you want to go listen and see what you're going to get on Patreon with Barrett and I every week listening to and watching The Sopranos together, episode 1 for Freezy, the pilot episode on patreon.com/oysters, clams, cockles, pinned to the top. Get in there, listen to it, enjoy it, and then jump in and ride with us the rest of the way. Like I said, episode 7 this week.
Yeah, and I'll just add, you know, a lot of our ad-based show conversations will be more like this going forward. We might there might not be a show, or we might not be on the same shows, or there might not be one that's really carrying conversation. And so if you really, really enjoy that piece
aspect
of it, of Ross and I taking an hour to break down an episode of television, that is where it is. And we honestly, I mean, like, we can try our little hearts out to make it happen for new shows that pop up.
But we'll both die.
But going, well, and I thought we were going to be able to do an episode, a podcast per episode of the show, but I was semi-worried about it. But through 7, it's like, I mean, we could talk for 2 hours about every episode if we wanted to.
Yeah, it's like that good. And there's
so
much.
It's that good. There's so many things to talk about and riff on and dissect
just
with the show.
Just the 90s elements alone.
It's really one of it. Really, I can, you know, we're not even to the great parts, and I can already see like why it's considered one of the best shows of all time, if not the best. So absolutely, come join, come share your hard earned money with us, because I think it's really worth it.
Come play with us, Danny. Forever and ever and ever. That's from The Shining, not The Sopranos, just to be clear. They both start with D and then an S word. Two different, completely different things.
Here, I'll do one for this from The Sopranos, okay, though, for okay. you. Bring the cookies.
Bring the cookies. What a bitch, dude. Patreon.com/oystersclamscockles to meet Tony Soprano's mother, Livia, who is just lovely. Just a real bright spot in the world.
And I don't know what you're talking about.
I wish the Lord would take me. Follow us on social media for updates on what we're doing with the pod, what we're doing with The Sopranos on Patreon, and everything in between in the best in TV and movies. Instagram, at Oysters Clams Cockles. Twitter, at Clams and Cockles. Facebook.com/OystersClamsCockles. My name is Ross Bolin, and you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at WRBOLEN, at WRBolin. And listen to my other podcast, The Ross Bolin Podcast, also brought to you by Bolin Media, wherever you listen to OCC. Follow me or subscribe on twitch.tv/BossRolin, where I play video games live a few times a week. And Mr. Dudley, where can we follow you on social mediums?
Check me out on the socials at Barrett Dudley, BarrettDudley.
It is known. Until our next helping, y'all have a great week. Hop on. We'll see you Thursday for The Sopranos, Season 1, Episode 7 on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. And until then, adios, muchachos.
Bring the cookies.
Bring the cookies.